you for tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Mean Mug. Why you mean mugging me, Denise? Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It decided to rain after I got used to that Southern California weather that Europe was giving me. But I'm good.
Vienna was giving you. Let's be specific, please.
Okay. You know? Yes.
So it is Pride Month for most people, not for me. That'll be next month. But anyway, it's the official Pride Month. And Philadelphia unveiled its new Pride flag. The original flag design was created in 1978 by artist Gilbert Baker. For those of you who might not know that, Gilbert Baker was an artist. He was gay. And he just died in March of this year. So Philadelphia, trying to be more inclusive, has created a new flag with its new campaign, More Color, More Pride. And they've added two stripes, brown and black, to the flag. As you can imagine, some people weren't feeling it. Some people were like, what is this extraness? However, the flag waves proudly at Philadelphia's City Hall. There's even a statement from the LGBT Affairs Director, Amber Hikes, quote, "We're proud to host this celebration for the community to come together, not just for pride, but also to reinforce our strides towards combating discrimination within our community, honor the lives of our Black and Brown LGBTQ siblings, and uplift our shared commitment to diversity and inclusion within our community." How about that? Do we need all this extraness? Wasn't the rainbow flag already enough? Didn't it represent everybody?
You put the brown and the black in there. I don't really even know how to feel about that, because I don't know if it goes. I'm not a graphic designer, so it's hard for me. You know, like, I looked at it and I was just like, so in SM community, they have something like that already. There's a SM flag, and what does that look like? Do you remember?
Mm-mm, no.
So that looks a certain way. So when I saw it, that's where my mind went, actually, because, you know, they got codes and stuff. And so I was like, well, this seems like it's been done, but not for the reason they think it's been done. So it just seems really strange.
Oh, now I know what you're talking about. Why are you being shady?
That's exactly what I went to when I saw it. I was just like, oh, this seemed like
naughty. Naughty. Listen.
Am I naughty? Okay.
So you sound like those white people on Twitter who were like, Why do we need these extra stripes? Why do we need the extra stripes? We don't need them? Is that what you're saying? We don't need them?
So my understanding from what I read, the extra stripes are to express solidarity with the Black and people of color community.
Not solidarity. Let me be clear. Let me quote the website.
Please do. Please do.
Quote. In 1978, artist Gilbert Baker designed the original rainbow flag, an iconic symbol of LGBTQ+ unity. So much has happened since then, a lot of good, but there's more we can do, especially when it comes to recognizing people of color in the LGBTQ+ community. To fuel this important conversation, we've expanded the colors of the flag to include black and brown. It may seem like a small step, but together we can make big strides towards a truly inclusive community. End quote.
Okay, so Philly has had problems. This is what is coming out of that. Like, this is their attempt to try to come out of those problems. And those problems have been around racism in their gayborhood, which is kind of like their gay neighborhood. They had even a club owner on tape using the N-word about his patrons, essentially, and talking about the inferior way that he felt was okay to treat them. So, you know, and that wasn't even the only incident. So they had issues. And so in an attempt to diversify, they've chosen to do this. I'm very wary of symbolism. I'm just very wary of it. I would much rather something a bit more substantive. I think that the flag, I don't know if that's where I want to be. I think what ends up happening a lot of time when people want to include, especially Black and Brown folks, is that they make us a spectacle. They put the attention on us instead of putting the attention on their systems. And that's really problematic for me. They put us in the brochure. They, you know, give 20 interviews to a person of color in a position of relative stance, right? Like, so it's a problem for me to just have all the symbolism. What does it translate to? I don't think that people are dying at higher rates because of a flag. I don't think that people are excluded from gay clubs because they're Black because of a flag, right? Like, it's not like the bouncer is going to be like, oh, what? Oh, come right in, Raheem. Like, that's not going, really? That's not going down. Yeah, right, really. His name not me. right? Or, you know, give Raheem that job because of a flag. So I think that the issues of exclusion and white supremacy within the gay and queer community is not because of the symbolism per se, especially okay. the abstract symbolism of the flag.
Mm-hmm. A flag that, you know, is used universally today. Well, I'm still going to go to morecolormorepride.com. Okay. And I'm going to create my own pride swag with the new stripes. Thank you.
Wow, somebody already capitalized on that joint.
That's their own project. That's their own project. That's their website. And because they're at capacity, they're saying you can create your own pride swag. And they give you, like, you know, all the things you can download to make t-shirts, pins, posters, all the stuff. All
right. You like the new flag. So why do you like the new flag?
I didn't say I like the new flag. Don't put words in my mouth.
Okay, you know what? Like, I have to go to, I have to go back to, like, how does one cross examine 101? So,
no,
CT,
Kamala Harris School. I do not remember ever saying. In other news, Amanda Seales. So actually, for whatever reason, Katy Perry, right, is doing all the nonsense, doing the absolute most right now, promoting her tour. I do not care about that. But there was a live thing, and Amanda Seales was in conversation with Caitlyn Jenner. I didn't know everybody was tight like that.
Wasn't Katy Perry in there?
It was her live feed. That's what I'm saying.
It's a Katy Perry
live feed.
Amanda Seales.
She's doing all this in promotion of her new album. She, like, had, like, this live therapy session where she was crying about suicidal thoughts. I mean, all kinds of stuff, right? I don't care about any of that. What I want to talk about today is Amanda Seales trying to school Caitlyn Jenner. Now, why do people keep wasting time on this? I do not understand. I'm sorry. I just had to say it that many times. But
you understand.
Do I?
You do.
So in this promotional live stream over the weekend for her album Witness, Amanda Seales, who is a comedian and actress, is basically trying to educate reality TV star Caitlyn Jenner on how America is not viewed the same by every person. Now, some people might think that because Caitlyn is a transgender woman, she shouldn't have any issue understanding that. Not the case. Caitlyn Jenner has been a vocal advocate for President Cheeto and doesn't seem to understand anything that doesn't have to do with white experience. What I wanted to ask you, though, was, one, why waste our time and energy? Black women are always putting so much time and energy in educating. We saw that a couple of times this week. And two, like, just because Caitlyn Jenner is, like, a part of the trans community, can we make someone disposable?
It's hard to make someone disposable when they have a huge amount of exposure and they're at least open to the conversation.
Is Caitlyn really open to the conversation, though? Because
is Bill Maher open to the conversation? I mean, the point is that they've given the conversation the platform.
Okay.
That's beyond what Alex Jones is going to do, right?
Okay.
Like, that's beyond what Rush Limbaugh is going to do. Mm-mm. They're not letting you even call in. Mm-mm. You can't even call in, John. Mm-mm. Right? So in that sense, it's like, oh, you're willing to let me read you on primetime? I'm going to read you on primetime.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But it, like, wasn't
more,
really a read.
It's more,
it wasn't
it's
really
more
a
exposure
read.
Than reading you on Twitter.
Was it really a read, though? Like, she even called her sis. I was like, what? That is reserved for, I'm sorry.
You know, a lot of people interpreted that different ways. Some people interpreted that. I looked at the reaction for that, and some people said that was shade. I think that it was good that she was able.
That's optimistic to say that was shade. But
okay, but it was really good that she exemplified ways of of countering Caitlyn without being transphobic. I think people find that hard. People find that hard.
Okay. Because
even Amanda posted this.
I feel like you're going off topic. Somebody else misgendered Caitlyn in that conversation. There's no reason to even bring up her being transphobic. I'm not talking about being transphobic. I'm not calling Caitlyn Jenner cis. Cis is something I reserve for a Black or brown woman who is fucking woke.
Mm-hmm.
This has nothing to do with being transphobic. I'm not calling Caitlyn cis. Caitlyn ain't cis. This ain't no sisterhood.
Clearly not. Clearly not. I think Amanda and hearing her in the presence of Caitlyn and seeing how Caitlyn really just has nothing to say but huh in response to that critique just was very illuminating. I think it was good. There are people that didn't know her before that now know her because of that interaction. And she was a great person to be in that position.
Right.
So I have known her for full disclosure since our Howard time. We were both in DC together. Followed her career. She's brilliant. She is funny. She has maintained this kind of like revolutionary core is what I would call it and has grown. And so even when she's put in this kind of like Hollywood world, it's not so foreign to her that she caves to the pressure and just acquiesces and tries not to make waves. So she's good in that sense. But then she's also good because she has a lot of just intelligence and knowledge behind her to make those points in an articulate way.
But does it really make sense to make the points that she made? Okay, so the clip that we're talking about, this particular part of this live stream is only about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And it takes her a very long time to even get to like actual points. She's trying to address it from a more emotional, empathetic side, right? She's not trying to go for the statistics and the scientific arguments because normally when you're sitting at a table like that, it works better to meet someone on an emotional level, right? So she's doing that. And it's not until like the very end that she throws out a few things. But something like Section 8 housing program restrictions isn't going to resonate with someone who doesn't know anything about Section 8. Like to throw out, you know, Black women couldn't have Black men in their Section 8 housing means nothing to someone like Caitlyn Jenner.
It's a very specific example of class-based example, right? I get that. I just, very few things mean anything to Caitlyn Jenner. That's the problem, right? We're dealing with a whole section of people that have been socialized out of empathy, that have been socialized out of the humanity of poor folks, out of the humanity of Black folks, and who have compartmentalized their own identity so that they can rationalize all of this and they can have that level of cognitive dissonance. And so Caitlyn is a really good example of that. I don't really know. I don't think that was the best example that she used with the Section 8 housing and the men in there. I also don't think that was the best example. However, I don't really think there's many examples that Caitlyn would resonate with Caitlyn. Would the eugenic program against a Black and brown woman throughout the 70s and 80s resonate with Caitlyn, who was not born with female reproductive systems? Like, would that resonate with her? I don't think so. And it also didn't happen to rich women, right? So there's so many examples where it would be like, well, you can opt out of so much because you're rich. You can also opt out of so much because for the majority of your life, you know, you presented as male. So that experience has been coming with you into this new experience, right? And empathy just is not part of the package that was given to her. But I think it was important that she said what she said on that level of exposure.
In our second segment, so there was like some news, kind of non-news, but maybe news that came out this week from the National Domestic Workers Alliance. They released report findings that were prepared by the Institute for Women's Policy Research, which is a nonprofit organization affiliated with George Washington University. And they titled the report, The Status of Black Women in the United States. Obviously, we're both originally from the U.S., however, living in Europe at this time. So some things might not feel like they're relevant to Europe, but they are, because my guarantee is that the status of Black women in the UK would be comparable or slightly worse, and across Europe with similar results. Now, in October, I'm going to a conference for women of color in Europe, and I'll be interested to hear more about this. But I want to talk about this particular report because there were a lot of findings. Some of the key findings, just to give you a few examples, Black women vote at a comparatively higher rate than all other groups of men and women, especially in the last two presidential elections. However, they remain underrepresented at every level of federal and state political office in the U.S. More than 6 in 10 Black women are in the workforce. However, their median annual earnings are just $34,000, which means they lag behind most women and men's earnings in the U.S. Black families depend on Black women's earnings, and so on and so forth, right? So there's a lot of things. Black women are educated at a higher level than they used to be. So for people who are 25 and over, they have higher rates of having a bachelor's or advanced degree. There were a lot of things that were taken into account. Something that we've also talked about in the past, from a young age, Black girls are disciplined at higher rates than all other groups of girls within public schools. We've talked about that with the Say Her Name campaign and the Black Girls Report given by the African American Policy Forum. But what for me is missing from this, and obviously the research that I did on it, most of this report was put together using U.S. Census data. So, you know, that kind of offers a bit of light, but also some restrictions as to what data they can compile and not. But one, I wonder, you know, what would it look like if we were talking specifically about queer Black women, queer and trans Black women? What would change in these numbers? And two, I don't know if you had an opportunity to look at the executive summary of the report, but, you know, they had some things about the data and how to go from here. And I felt like the recommendations were heavily centered on systems, institutions, laws, federal, state, and local policies. And if that's the case, with the current political climate and administration, it feels like there have been some strides and some improvements. It feels like we're going to go back, or we're going to stand still for, you know, the next 4 years.
Yeah. In terms of systems, I mean, forget about it. Even in the military, Blacks are disciplined at more harshly than their white counterparts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So systems are not going to save us. Systems were set up in opposition to the Black body.
Right.
This is something that, especially with America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, they don't like to admit around their systems. Their systems are pure. Their systems are inherently good. So to say, okay, but your system was set up on the predication of the subjugation of the Black body is seem like an insult, but it's just true. I think that that institutional memory is something that one does not lose unless it's directly addressed. And it just isn't directly addressed.
It's not directly addressed. Recently, a report came out showing that Black women, it was a report on Black women's health, right? And it showed that Black women across educational background, across income, still do worse, right? They can be earning well and they can and have all these things and they'll still have a shorter life expectancy. They're still more vulnerable to diseases like heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and they have a lower rate of survival than white women, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And some scientists are finally getting clued in that that can only be explained through, for example, epigenetics and just the hardships and stress and anxiety of being in the world as a Black person. So if we get like this report, which the report, in my opinion, the tone of it wasn't necessarily a negative one, and it wasn't one of despair at all. You know, they were trying to show the progress that's been made. But if all the recommendations are, and obviously this is an alliance of a lot of different groups coming together, but most of these organizations were grassroots organizations when they united into the National Domestic Workers Alliance. But if so much of their recommendations is put on policymakers, and we don't have trust in policymakers, what is it that we can do?
Boo boo, I don't know. I mean, like, I'm not really sure. Really, I'm not really sure. I feel like Black women have had somewhat of a socialist network amongst ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That has been my experience of Black women. When we have mental health crises, when we have housing crises, when we need someone to unofficially foster our kids, whether that's within or without the outside of the U.S., my experience has been that we do that for each other. And our priority within that, because we understand that the system is based on the subjugation of our bodies, particularly, is to try as much as possible to keep the system away from us as a form of protection. Sometimes this is really problematic, especially within the case of sexual abuse, sexual assault, and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Domestic violence, right? Intimate partner violence. Because what ends up happening is that people are left to recreate that cycle without any kind of interference. So keeping the state out of our lives comes at a cost, but it's a cost that we've been willing to bear because having the state within our lives comes at a greater cost. We're incarcerated at a rate greater than any other woman, especially in the last 20 years. The rate of the incarceration of Black women for petty offenses, especially offenses stemming from intimate partner violence, absolutely skyrocketed. And so we know that the state is definitely not the answer. At least I know that the state is not the answer. So of course, you know, a policy institute is like, oh, the answer is the state in these institutions that are causing all of these outcomes to happen. I don't agree.
You don't agree. Mm-hmm. Then what?
I don't have all the answers. I'm not the oracle.
I mean, you were the oracle.
I mean, I think what we've been doing in terms of like of that kind of intentional community with each other and that fierce support for each other is part of the answer. The reason why I think Black women are on the forefront of identity politics because we need it so fiercely. Like, we really need politics that focus on the fact that we are women and that's the fact that we're Black, because so much of our subjugation is based on that, whether we're queer or not. So I don't think a lot of other people can understand that. As we've seen, even people in the queer community find it very hard to understand that. Black women are dealing with the intersection of so many different kinds of oppressions, especially queer Black women, trans Black women, are dealing at the intersection of so many kinds of oppressions that it boggles the mind of someone. And so their fragility comes out and they just rather look away or not deal with it. I think that we're dealing with an alternate universe kind of scenario. So there's this policy and it's a self-serving kind of executive summary. Oh, if we just change these systems. But they also didn't like offer any kind of remedy for those systems or any specific policy mandate to help move in a different direction from what I remember, right? So it's just like this vague, you know, someone was saying, I said to someone the other day, I said, what do you want? And they were like, well. And I was like, could you be a bit more vague? And this is what this sounds like to me, is a lot of vagueness.
The report?
Mm-hmm.
I think in a first step, the report was trying to offer just a holistic view of the conditions that Black American women are experiencing across the country. There was a report in 2014 that tried to do something similar, but there hasn't been like a report that really collates all of this information in the way that this report does. So for the first step, I think it's great. Mm-hmm. However, what needs to happen next is, and obviously the National Domestic Workers Alliance has those connections, working with other grassroots organizations that work specifically with justice projects for transgender people, justice projects for Black immigrant women, and so forth, coming together to really create policy that they can put forth. Because okay, that does work. It doesn't work quickly, but it does have an impact.
So this was step one.
I think this was step one. And for that, I am grateful. In our final segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to?
Yes. So as we know, this is Pride time. And so I am the unofficial Pride photographer. No, I'm not. But there, I don't know why, you know, the queer orthodoxy just cannot organize with the weather gods and make it so that it does not rain during our outdoor festivities. But we have today in Indiana something called Pride Village.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a set of performances that are happening. There's our friend Margaret will be performing at one of them.
Nice.
Right. So that's really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
So this weekend is Pride Weekend in Vienna. That's what you're saying.
What?
Hey. So you're going to be in them streets. You're going to be in them streets.
I don't know about all that. But the thing about Vienna you have to understand is that Vienna always overdoes it. Like, every weekend is Pride Weekend.
Okay.
Like, on every street tram, there is a rainbow flag.
That's nice.
Right? So, like, it's like all downtown instead of just having like the regular ample where it's like a walking man or a man who's red.
Regular traffic light. Uh-huh. For pedestrians.
Yeah. I said ample. Ooh. They have like same-sex couples or, you know.
Oh, that's cute. Couples.
Yeah.
So. I dig it. I dig it.
Vienna and doesn't know any halfway when it comes to festivals. So every weekend in June is Pride weekend.
That's dope.
It's Pride. Yeah. Rainbow Festival coming next week, but this weekend is Pride Village. Pride. You get what I'm saying? Okay, it's like stages to this joint. Stages to this stages. Another thing I'm looking forward to is Wonder Woman discussion. So Wonder Woman came to Vienna. I saw it, the whole fam. Mm-hmm. We did that. It was the
But you weren't invited to the Oprah viewing. Oops.
Did not get an invite. They'll be sending Oprah a telegram. I've been really conflicted about how to engage white feminists in Vienna on a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And Wonder Woman, I think, you know, is this catalyst for me to be like, okay, Denise, you got to look at that. And make some, you know, come to some sort of peace or some sort of resolution about how you engage the feminist community here. Because this discussion is very, very heavy and layered, especially within the Austrian context. What are you looking forward to, Cece?
Well, tonight, I am taking someone to see their favorite comedian, and their favorite comedian is some more.
Some more
is in London.
What?
Exactly. I have been watching some more for years, since I was like a teeny bopper. That's how long I've been knowing some more. I've never seen her live. I'm going to see her live tonight. I think it's going to be cringeworthy. I think she's still going to make me laugh because that is my relationship with most comedians. So I'm looking forward to it. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
And yeah. And so other than that, yeah, I'm taking it easy. We got sunshine on Saturday and I hope to use it because the next day it will rain again. That is my self priority of the week. Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today. So feel free to get at us. And check out the new Patreon set up, patreon.com/thequeertruth. Drop us a dime if you can. We're off next week, but we'll be back with a special episode after that. Until next time, peace out.